box.
Good afternoon and welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm your host, Larry Cartwright, and my co-host is Tracy Ivey. And this is NAMI's Hour, compliments of Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and there is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we are all volunteers. We work out of our houses, so we don't have a big traffic jam going from the living room to the dining room. But and we try to help people who either have a mental illness, get the right medications and the right get on the road to recovery. And we also try to help families who have someone in their family or know someone or work with someone or live next door to someone or best friends, whatever, understand more what that person is going through. And we do it by various means. We have a 12-week course called Family to Family, where we try to get the person taking the course to feel what it's like to be the person with the illness. And we run support groups monthly, the third Thursday of every month, right here in Flemington at 52 East Main Street. You don't have to be a member of NAMI to join. You don't have to come to the support group. You don't have to be a member of NAMI to take any of our classes. We have a class called Educating the Educators, which we try to help the teachers understand more about young teenagers, adolescents who may have mental illness. We try to enlighten the police departments. Pardon me. But everything we do is free. There is no charge for anything, any of the booklets or pamphlets or anything we hand out during the classes. It's all free. If you have any questions or you'd like some more information, you can call us at 908-284-0500. That's 908-284-0500. We don't have someone man the phone 24/7, but we do have a very nice lady who checks it twice a day, and we promise we will get back to you as soon as possible. We are very privileged today to have with us two ladies from Freedom House. We have Dawn Nill. Did I say it right?
You said it right.
All right. Drop the K. who is the Director of Marketing and Development. And we have Jen Jones, who is the Intake Coordinator. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for coming. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us. Happy to be here.
You sure, Jen?
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
I'm only teasing. The reason I say that is because the executive director who was supposed to come was ill today and couldn't make it, so they dragged Jen at the last minute. So I'm just busting her a little bit, that's all.
Good.
You know, can you tell us what Freedom House is and how did it get started and who started it, that sort of thing?
Sure. So I'll give you a little background on how we got started, and then I'll let Jen take over on giving you some details about the programs. So Freedom House started back in 1986 by a gentleman named Terry Harriet. And so it was a small group, him and a small group of concerned citizens who saw the problems that people were having with addiction. And, like a lot of nonprofits these days, start around a little small kitchen table. And, one client, one bedroom on the Hagedorn property up in Glen Gardner. And so then it grew, that client then paid it forward and started helping with renovations to another bedroom so that they could have another client come. And today we're 44 beds strong at that one facility.
And that's still up at Hagedorn.
That's still up at Hagedorn, right. Yeah.
It's on the right-hand side as you go up to where it used to be the hospital.
Yes, yeah. When you go up there and nice through the woods, and it's nice and peace and calming up there, which is great for treatment. So I'll turn it over to Jen. She can give you a little bit of details on each of the programs.
Okay, Jen.
Hi.
You're up.
Yeah, sure. So I am typically located at the Halfway House. So the Halfway House is the 44-bed facility for men. And typically, on average, the clients are there about 6 months. And usually, it's done on an individual basis. So we've had people in as little as 4 months complete. We've had people upwards to longer, 8, 10 months. So that's the men's Halfway House. Basically, they live in the Halfway House, and they work out in the community during the day, and then at night, they have treatment. We also have outpatient services. So we have two programs. We have one in Clinton, and then we have one in Phillipsburg. So both of those locations have intensive outpatient services and standard outpatient services. And we also have two transitional living houses for men. So one is in Morristown, and then one is also near the halfway house in Glen Gardner. So typically those houses get filled with clients who complete the halfway house and are looking to transition to some sort of additional safe housing. So mm-hmm. a lot of times what they'll do is complete the halfway house and then attend the outpatient or intensive outpatient programs while they're living in the transitional living houses as well.
Are you said that at, like they go to work and then at, say the one in Glen Gardner, they go to work and yep. then they come back and you said treatment.
Yeah.
What, are you talking about, what am I, like a counselor talking
sure,
to
yeah.
them?
Sure, yeah, what does that look like? Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically, we do have full-time counselors there. So we have credentialed counselors. And so they have individual client caseloads, right?
Mm-hmm.
So each counselor has their own caseload, but what we also do is have large groups at night as well. So every night of the week, we typically do something a little bit different. So they might have a small caseload group, or we might have like a large educational group, and then okay. we kind of rotate on and off nights going to local AA or NA meetings during the week as well.
So is there any individual counseling at there some point?
Yep. Yeah, mm-hmm. So the clients get at least 1 hour of individual sessions a week. Mm-hmm.
I assume that there has to be some kind of a process for someone to get into this program. Correct.
Yeah, that's quite the process. You're right. Yeah, so, and that's a large job for me as one of my key roles. So typically to get into the halfway
that's
house.
Pretty much why I asked.
Yeah, yeah. To get into the halfway house, it starts initially with a phone screen. So someone will call the halfway house saying, you know, they're looking to get into the program. And what we'll do is give a general overview of the program to them. Over the phone,
right.
yeah.
Okay.
Answer any questions that they have, and then we'll also do like a screening with them to make sure that they're appropriate for the program. So on average, that's typically like a 20 to 25 minute process over the phone, and that's kind of like the initial step.
Right.
So if that client looks appropriate for the program, the next step is to secure certain types of medical documentation that the state requires. So that would include an up-to-date tuberculosis screening test and basic medical records stating that that person does not have any communicable diseases and that they're physically capable enough to be in the program because we don't have any elevators. And,
right.
You know,
right.
So basically once we have the medical documentation and the phone interview complete, they go on a waiting list. And so the waiting list on average is about 3 months to get into the program. So once a client is on the waiting list, they do have to call and check in weekly to keep themselves active on the waiting list.
Okay.
So once they're on the waiting list, they'll call, check in. They can just leave me a message for that. It's not, you know, a terribly big deal. But every time they do leave a check-in, I will go to the waiting list and just write the check-in and keep themselves active on the waiting list. So from there, obviously, if they're contacting us once a week, I have a pretty good idea of where they're at. So once we do have a date for them to come in, we'll arrange a date and have them admitted, you know, transport and admitted for that day.
So are you saying there's no in-person interview before?
Not typically, no.
Okay.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Got it. And what about women? You have a Freedom House for women, right?
Yeah, so that program is called The Family Afterward, and it started in the early 2000s. It is not treatment like the men's program. It is case management. And so women and their children can live together in this house that we have in Trenton. We have 6 beds. And so our goal is to assist these women navigate DCP&P, you know, find work, maybe they want to go back to school, you know, things like that so that they can get off the social service rolls and be more self-sufficient.
And keep their kids?
And keep their kids, yes. That's a big part because many of them have either lost their children, custody of their mm-hmm. children, or are at risk of losing custody of their children due to their addiction. And, you know, once they get in that foster care system, it's difficult to, you know, to navigate that all on your own.
But some of them do have their children with them.
Yes, they do.
And
mm-hmm.
Then they now are going to a school in Trenton, or are they being bused back to their home school?
No, it would be in Trenton because that's okay. their residence. Okay. That's their residence. And we do have, you know, our outpatient services are for adult men and women. So that is, you know, both.
Now, how long do the women usually stay at that facility?
You know, that's interesting because there is no time limit for those women to stay there. So it's really up to an individual. You know, women can stay there as long as they need to be able to get back on their feet, which is, you know, it's a pro and it's a con. You know, it's a pro because, you know, they may need longer time to, you know, to get through this process. But then that also means that they're taking up beds, you know, for someone else. You know, there's such a need for more of those types of services as well as the men's halfway house. I mean, we could easily fill another 44 beds in the men's program as well.
With a waiting list.
With a waiting list, yeah.
That's amazing. All right,
talking about a waiting list, how long basically is your waiting list for?
Yeah, on average, it's about 3 months.
Okay.
Yeah, which is a long time because when people are ready for treatment and they make that phone call, you know, they're not expecting a 3 month wait. So it's very difficult. It's very non-conducive, you know, for the continuum of treatment. So what we have had in the past is people either attend maybe our IOP program while they wait because it's at least some sort of treatment. And then another thing is when we do the phone interview, we always tell them up front that there is a wait. And so sometimes people don't want to wait, and that's okay, too. So, you know, our job is to help people. So we always provide names and numbers of programs that maybe they can have a shorter list, some sort of treatment.
Yeah. Is the waiting list for the women about the same or longer?
Well, the women's program is unique in the fact that it is funded right now just through Mercer County. So the women have to have a residence of Mercer County.
Okay.
So, you know,
that makes a waiting list, though,
there's a small waiting list for them.
Oh, it's not usually
it's
a
not
full
right,
3 months. And
right.
Do you consider that transitional housing then for the women or what?
Okay. That's transitional housing.
Okay.
Yes.
Great.
You know, and the face of addiction has changed over the years. You know, it used to be, you know, 40-year-old, you know, mostly alcoholics. It's not now.
Right.
It is these young men and women, you know, that are 18, 20, 25 years old that are, you know, addicted to heroin. And so then the treatment has to change. And so, you know, Freedom House has done a really good job, I think, you know, in my, you know, biased opinion of changing the curve, you know, bringing in counselors that, you know, are able to treat people that have these opiate, you know, addictions and the younger people. It's very difficult.
Was it originally just for alcoholics, did you say?
It wasn't just, but that was the typical client.
Okay,
you know, years, you talk, you know, 30-some-odd years ago, you know, that's what you would see is mostly alcoholics and an older population.
What do you think makes Freedom House an outstanding organization?
Well, you know, we're a little biased about that. Right?
Well, obviously, but, you know.
I think, you know, I did not come to Freedom House with any knowledge or experience in the addiction field. I worked in elder care before that and in the YMCA before that. So I really came in with no knowledge and no bias whatsoever. But now that I've been there for 3 years, a couple things stand out to me. Freedom House is always forward-thinking. The board, the staff, they're always forward-thinking to make sure that we're keeping up with the curve and meeting the needs of the clients. So that's number one. Number two, I think having a situation, a services like a halfway house is, I think, benefits the clients in a better way than residential treatment. And I'm not saying this with, I have no clinical background whatsoever. Just me as a humble, you know, mom with kids and, you know, looking at this is, you know, if you're getting treatment and, you know, it probably works for some people being, you know, in a residential treatment. But I think when you're in a halfway house, you're given that opportunity to be in society part of the time and out of society. So you're out there working. You're using the skills that you've been given and taught.
Right.
And if you fall down, because you're going to fall down, everybody falls down, right?
Does.
You're back there at the end of the day and have a really, you know, strong support system. So I think, you know, just the structure, you know, that was set up 32 years ago of being a halfway house, I think that really was, that was forward thinking at that point too.
Right.
And there still are not a lot of halfway houses
right
around.
We have to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 40 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investors, Rabcoin has been for the industry since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block has been an expert and an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and my co-host is Tracy Ivey.
Hello.
And we're very privileged today to have with us two women from Freedom House. And one is Dawn Nill, who's the Director of Marketing and Development, and the other is Jen Jones, who's the Intake Coordinator. And we're very privileged to have you here. Dawn, I know that Freedom House is a nonprofit. So where do you get your funding from?
So, you know, we are based in Hunterdon County, but we do serve the entire state of New Jersey. And I say that because I don't want people to think, oh, well, you know, they're in Hunterdon County. That's a Hunterdon County nonprofit. We don't need to support them. So I always make sure that I clarify that. We do get quite a bit of funding so far, and we're very thankful for this, from the state and the county. And in a minute, Jen can go into more detail for that. But, you know, we know that that's funding's not always stable. So we, again, forward think, and we do some fundraisers, and we try to meet with individuals who, you know, have a passion for what we do, you know, helping people through on their road to recovery. So we have a golf outing coming up in like 2.5 weeks on July 11th. That's going to be at Fiddler's Elbow. It's actually the 27th year that we're doing this golf outing. And we've secured two courses, which means about 144 golfers. We're getting close to that number. So,
really? Okay.
Yeah, so I would encourage people if, you know, recovery is something they're passionate about or they just like to play golf at Fiddler's Elbow, you know, give us a call. At the end of the show, I will, you know, give you what the phone number and the website is, and we'd love to have people there. So what? I just want to turn it over to Jen so she can talk about the funding a little bit.
Okay. So go ahead, Jen.
It does depend on the site. So the halfway house, the way the halfway house is funded is a couple of things. So it is state service, right? So NJSI is one of our key funding sources. So that stands for New Jersey Statewide Initiative. So that's anyone who lives in the state of New Jersey we can get funding for, as long as they are indigent, meaning they have no means to pay for mm-hmm. their own treatment. So that's kind of one of our big funders. We also have drug court funding, so clients who are on drug court. We also have ISP funding, Intensive Supervision Program. And then we also have PEARL, MAP SBB funding. So, you know, a good amount of the clients are mandated. A good amount of them are voluntary. So it's about 50-50, I would say. They do have to contribute. So there is a $75 okay. admission fee.
That was my next
yeah,
question.
Yeah. No. So when they come in, they're given what's called a welcome bag. And the welcome bag has all their basic necessities, sheets, pillow, body wash. And they're also provided with some materials, a brand new big book, rule book, binder. So then they get some quarters and stuff for laundry mm-hmm. cart and stuff. So that's like a $75 fee for admissions, and that's a one-time deal. And then going forward from there, it is a $50 a week logistics fee that the clients must contribute towards. So that's the halfway house. For outpatient services, we do have Medicaid funding. So clients who okay. have Medicaid can get treatment. We also have certain funding according to the county of who lives in what county. So the Clinton site has even Hunterdon County funding. The Phillipsburg site has Warren County funding.
Right.
And then again, we do have the drug court funding, the ISP, and the parole funding as well for both of those programs. And then we have had people actually self-pay. We do utilize the sliding scale for that.
Okay.
So that's kind of like the general funding.
Now, I understand that a lot of the organizations are concerned because coming about in July, or maybe it's around that period of time, there's a thing called fee for services that is coming out, and I don't know if that affects you guys or not, whereas that you have to pay, you know, for some of the services that you give to the people and, you know, yada yada. So a lot of, like, some of the organizations like Easter Seals is affected by it, Catholic Charities is affected by mm-hmm. it, so I was just curious. I didn't know if you guys are affected by it or not.
Well, I know for a fact that the drug court is a fee-for-service already. So I have a feeling that we're already
in that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Again, you know, forward thinking, you know, being a little ahead of the curve and, you know, not waiting until the
mm-hmm.
gavel
okay.
drops.
Right.
So what services would they be paying for then, that if they're involved in the fee-for-service as opposed to just paying $50 a week?
Well, I know, so like for drug court, I know that drug court pays a certain amount per day for the clients.
Okay.
And the clients, you know, still contribute, but I know that it's, you know, it's managed through the fee-for-service.
Right. So the way I understand the way fee-for-service works is it's not so much what the client pays, it's that if you are getting funding, you are getting funded for the right. services you're providing to the client.
Right.
Not that you're given a contract for X amount of dollars and now you just spend it however you want. You have to show that you're spending it for each client, you know, on what client.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that, you know, again, we've been doing that for a long time.
Okay, so but it's still coming from the same source then primarily. It's just a question of
right.
how it's reported or allocated.
How you're allocating
right.
funds.
Got it. Okay, got it.
Exactly.
Okay, a quick question is, you know, somebody might not really be clear, and I wasn't that clear when you talked about the transitional versus halfway. What is the major
sure.
difference?
Yeah, so the halfway house is it's staffed 24 hours.
Okay.
So we have support staff there overnight. We have clinical staff there, usually like 9 a.m. close to 11 p.m.
Okay.
So, you know, as far as the halfway house goes, it's relatively in depth with the staff members and the case management.
Right.
And, you know, like I said, they have a counselor there. They have individual sessions. They're part of groups. I mean, even the halfway house, they're required to budget any paychecks they get. I mean, they have to budget all that. They've got, you know, routines and schedules they have to adhere to. The transitional living houses are typically once they complete the halfway house. So that means that it's got a lot lower as far as the supervision from the staff. I mean, there are staff members who oversee. We have a gentleman at the halfway house who's one of the counselors. He oversees the transitional living houses for the men. And then there's also like a house manager. Mm-hmm. Typically, that's one of the elder gentlemen that's been there the longest, senior gentleman at the transitional living house. So, you know, as far as staffing goes, you know, the transitional living house is much less intensive.
So it's like a stepping stone into independent
living.
It's totally
clear. Right.
So they do pay rent to live there. It's mm-hmm. it's at a very yeah. reduced yeah. rate. And there is a limit. They're only supposed to be there about 6 months mm-hmm. so that we can turn mm-hmm. over so mm-hmm. that other people can have a chance to live there.
Do you find that some of your clients who either have a drug or alcohol problem also have a mental health issues?
Absolutely, yeah. I'm going to say upwards of 70%, something like that is my best guess. Yeah, because typically they go hand in hand. I mean, a lot of times people are self-medicating because of mental health that's, you know, either untreated or misdiagnosed. So often they're hand in hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you get that information before they come in from their medical records? And how do you know, how can you protect the population from someone who might be violent or something? Just curious.
Well, that is all evaluated prior to their admission. So the phone interview, for example, that is all evaluated. Their mental health, their physical status. I also evaluate for any kind of history of violent crimes, arson, Megan's Law. I mean, that's all evaluated prior to them coming in.
Right.
So, I mean, you know a very good picture of who's coming to the program prior to them standing on the doorstep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is that...
I just wondered if someone's diagnosis could fall through the cracks somehow.
All can happen no matter where.
Because,
you know
it's, I mean, they're telling me the truth, so I don't necessarily know if it is true or not, and that's not really, you know, they're telling me a self-report. So, you know, whatever they're telling me is all I can go off of. I mean, the other thing is we do get sent referrals from other treatment programs. That's another way to do the referral process. So they will usually send any kind of like progress notes or mental health diagnoses that they have on record. Sometimes we will ask for, you know, like sometimes the psychiatrist to have notes or something or medication lists. So, I mean, a lot of that would be sent over through the referring agency as well, if it's someone who's not from the community. For example, someone coming from like a detox or a short-term program, we typically get a pretty good understanding of those mental health diagnoses prior to admission to our program.
Okay. And you, I assume, have a psychiatrist on staff?
Yeah, we have an APN.
Okay.
So, and that's been
helpful. Let's explain what an APN is for the readers. It's a
advanced nurse practitioner. Right?
Nurse practitioner, okay.
Right. So, yeah, he does. He's been there for how long? A couple months now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he's relatively new, but I mean, he does assessments. He does follow up appointments with the clients. So we will transport the clients to go see the APN, Fair Mental Health Services.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does he also prescribe medication, too?
Yes, he does. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I assumed. Okay.
Do you find that some of your clients sometimes relapse several times before finally succeeding? I know I find it's very true with mental health. I've been dealing with mental health issues for 20 years now.
Right.
My youngest son, we have four kids, and my youngest son is schizophrenic, so we've been dealing, you know, with that for quite a while. Thank God he's very good right now. He has his own apartment and has for the last 7 years, and he works at BJ's for three. He's been over 3 years. So,
awesome.
And he takes his meds religiously, so that's a good thing. But a lot of times, I know with mental health, they'll stop taking their meds or they'll come out of the hospital and they feel great. Well, why do they feel great? Because they were on their meds.
Right.
So they don't need their meds anymore because they feel great. So then they crash and they start all over again. It's like, you know, over and over and over again. What happens to your clients if they crash? Are they allowed to continue in the program, or are they forced to go and get straightened out before they can come back, or what's the story there?
Right, yeah. So I'm hearing kind of a couple of things. So relapse as far as substance use and medication relapse. So if a client does use substances while they're in the program, they typically are discharged, sometimes referred to another program. But typically if it's a client who is not using their medication or taking their medication on a routine basis, we do refer them back to the APN. If they don't want to take their medications, they do have to actually get an updated script saying that a discontinue of medications.
Okay.
But if they do relapse in the halfway house, typically they're discharged or referred to another level of care. They are typically accepted back to the program for treatment, depending on, of course, the circumstances
right.
of the discharge.
Right.
But we have had clients several times that have been in the program multiple times, and unfortunately it is a relapsing disease.
Yep.
It's relatively rare for, as they call it, first-time winners.
Yeah.
Of course, that's part of treatment. People don't want to take their medications. People do want to use substances. I mean, it's all part of treating the person because it's usually not a one-time deal.
And it happens in transitional, too.
Mm-hmm.
Halfway, I don't know, hopefully less in transitional because by now they've been away from the substance longer. But what happens if somebody relapses while they're in transition? Same thing? They're out of the program right away?
Yeah, typically same thing. And like I said, I mean, usually they're welcome back, of mm-hmm. course. But it does have some circumstances. I mean, we do want to have at least a time limit of where, maybe they go to detox or they're getting treatment somewhere else before obviously bringing them back.
Yes, right. Understand. Okay.
If someone is has breaks down, okay, has either a mental health breakdown or a breakdown,
mm-hmm.
and you say they can come back after they're
Stabilized. Yeah.
That was the word I was looking for.
Right.
I'm from Brooklyn. We don't have those words then.
No problem.
But, so then they come back after they're stabilized.
Mm-hmm.
And you say this could happen numerous times?
Now, when you're talking about stabilized, you mean as far as, like, mental health, right?
Either mental health or if they went off and used drugs again.
Okay.
Or alcohol. And,
Right, yeah. So as far as mental health goes, so if someone has a significant problem, mental health speaking, and they need stabilization, typically we will get them stabilized at, the hospital behavioral health center.
Mm-hmm.
We have had clients, maybe if they're there for a day or a couple of days to get stabilized, figure out the medications, what works best for them. But if they do relapse in the program and they need to be discharged from the program, like I said, they're allowed to return typically, but as far as how many times they're allowed to return, is that what you're asking?
Yeah, right.
It depends. I mean, we have had clients there. I think we've had a couple of gentlemen since I've been there over 4 years. I don't think they've been there upwards to 5 times.
Okay.
So,
what is the average age of the people? Just roughly.
Yeah, so I would say right now the demographics is probably a little closer to the younger age, maybe 20s, mid-20s. But, we have gentlemen of all ages there. I mean, we have gentlemen in the 60s, we literally like age 18 to like 65 right now.
Do you find that there's any threats or barriers to your organization?
You mean for people seeking treatment or?
In general.
In general.
People seeking treatment or,
Definitely. There's still a stigma out there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, same with mental health. So, on the client side, and I'm sure Jen will agree, people won't seek treatment for that reason.
Right, right.
And as far as, people supporting us, I would say there's people out there that won't support us because they feel this is not a disease. They think it's a choice. And I think when people really sit down and think hard and truthful about it, everyone knows someone. And even if it's not someone who's directly in your family, it could be, a couple
you know, people over. I mean, I don't know what the statistic is, you know, one in so many people. I think it's like one in three families, I think they say, drug-free New Jersey, one in three families are affected by addiction. So.
Well, I know that they've done numerous surveys. Mm-hmm. It used to be one in five people are affected by mental illness. Now it's one in four. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the professionals are leaning to one in three, which somewhere between three and four it would sound. And that's not just New Jersey. That's the world, you know. Right. So you think about the world population, mm-hmm. and 20% of it is has mental illness of some sort, you know. That's pretty scary, especially if the with the stigma involved in it, mm-hmm. you know. But I think that more and more professional people, actors, singers, who come out and say they have a problem, it helps. Mm-hmm. You know, I know that a lot of them have come out recently. Demi Lovato has come out, and she speaks for NAMI at their large conventions and stuff. And, you know, Bruce Springsteen has come out and said he has problems. He has depression. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I think
Why are you laughing?
I'm just, you know, like, I'm a big believer that everyone has problems in some capacity, one way or another. And I don't think it's, you know, it's black or white. You know, I think right. to me, it's a scale. Everybody has every, you know, you can't say it's yes or no. It's on a scale, right? Mm-hmm. Sure. And so maybe some people have more problems than others. But, you know, I don't think there's anyone in this world that you can talk to that's never had a problem or hasn't had, you know, a bad day or hasn't had or felt like they need help in some capacity. We all need help. That's why I'm laughing is... You know, everybody needs help. And I think that stigma of, you know, oh, everybody's got this great life. And no, you know, I think that really feeds into,
sure.
you know, hindering people to treatment.
And, you know, people, everybody gets depressed.
Right.
You know, I don't care who you are.
Yeah.
You know, you lose your job, you break up with your girlfriend, or your marriage goes south or whatever.
Right.
Or you wreck your brand new car, or, you know, and you get depressed. I know that I had lost my job one time. And I was at a, you know, about a week after a week gone by, and I said, I got to get out of this. I got four kids and, you know, mortgage. I got to go find a job and, you know, quit feeling sorry for myself, you know. But not everybody can do that, mm-hmm. you know. A lot of times they don't do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it is tough, you know. Mm-hmm. Do you find that if one of your clients has supportive family, it makes it easier for them or not?
That's a loaded question. It depends because sometimes, I mean, you can have family who are supportive, but you can also have family who are supportive and uneducated in being supportive.
That too, yeah.
Right? So, I mean, it really depends because I don't think it's necessarily the quantity of support systems, but it's the quality of your support systems. So, you know, and I like to tell the guys, you know, family, it doesn't have to be blood relatives.
Right.
You know, so as far as supportive services go, the more support systems you have, absolutely the higher chance of success that you have.
Mm-hmm.
But I think support services and supportive people can be a whole range of people. I mean, you know,
right.
it could be family, friends, you know, your local,
sure.
you know, 12-step sponsor
right.
or your church
right.
or, you know, it could be a whole plethora of different
oh, yeah,
people.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be blood, you know.
Exactly,
you
yes,
know.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot
yeah.
of times families don't get it, you know.
Yeah.
Or they don't want to get it.
Right.
You
or,
know?
You know, for our guys, a lot of them have chronic relapse history.
Right.
So a lot of times at the point that they get to the halfway house, they've burned a lot of bridges.
Yeah.
And
right.
so a lot of family
yeah.
don't want to talk to them or don't
right.
want to be involved.
Right.
I mean, we've had guys at the halfway house trying to fill out their admission paperwork, ask, you know, I'm like, who's your emergency contact? And they have no one. They say, literally, I have no one.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes, I
right.
mean, I have to use a probation officer
mm-hmm.
as a, you know,
as
emergency
a contact.
Contact.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, these guys have been through a lot.
So what do you think are some of the best predictors of success?
Interesting you ask that because as Jen was talking, I'm thinking about, you know, I doing the marketing, I like to talk to as many of the clients as I can. So if they're standing outside waiting for, you know, outpatient services and I'm working late one night, I just go out there while they're having a break. And I'm like, hey, so what's going on? You know, tell me a little bit about your story. Or I'll see someone back in the program. And I'm like, I'm glad you're back, but I'm not glad you're back. Like, why are you here? Just to get their story. And some of the stuff that sticks with me is I hear it over and over again. I thought I was doing really well, that I didn't need to keep working the program. So they stopped calling their sponsor. They stopped going to meetings. And they haven't, it hasn't clicked with them yet that this is a lifelong commitment. Right. If you want to live, you have to do this every day. It's like a cancer patient that has to take medication every day, or a diabetic that's got to take insulin. You can't just say, I'm not going to do this anymore and stop. You're going to die.
Right.
So I think that that's, you know, that kind of is what sticks with me, is that this is a lifelong process. You know, you're never done.
Do you feel they have to hit bottom in order to finally stop relapsing? Is that always part of the cycle?
I think, and for, well, I think it depends on the person.
Yeah, not depends always. On it's what their bottom is. Yeah.
It's an individual disease. You know what works for me may not work for you.
Right. I mean, we've had clients say, you know, oh, in the beginning I came in for my mom or my daughter, or, you know, and as they kind of progress through the program, it goes from kind of an external motivation to more of an internal motivation. So it really depends, you know.
And, you know, the thing is, too, like with mental illness also, I may be able to take Bufferin and you can't because your body, you know, reacts differently.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's body reacts differently to the medications. So I know it was years and years before they found a medication that worked for my son, because he's been epileptic since he's five. So the epileptic medication would interfere with the psychotic medication, and it would just go off the charts.
Mm-hmm.
So until they found something, it was, you know, rough for a long period. And I'm sure it's the same thing with, you know, people. You know, they may say, okay, I can do this, and I'll stop drinking, you know, and do this, this, and this. But then something happens or whatever, and it's like a trigger, and it, you know, sets them off again. We've got to take another break, and we'll be right back in just a couple minutes.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.com. www.thefamilyafterword.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you...
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Welcome. Hello.
Go ahead.
Okay, we're back with Mental Health Matters, and we have Dawn Nill and Jen Jones from Freedom House. We wanted to talk about one of your upcoming fundraisers, which is going to be, I believe you said July 21st, the golf outing?
July 11th.
July 11th.
July
11th. Okay,
clarify. So we have a golf outing coming up on July 11th at Fiddler's Elbow, and people are interested in taking out a foursome, coming as an individual, maybe doing a sponsorship. You can reach me at 908-617-5492, or you can visit our website, which is freedomhousenj.org. Don't forget the NJ for New Jersey, because there are some other Freedom Houses out there in the country, and so that's why you need the NJ.
So it's freedomhousenj.org.
You got it.
Remember the phone number, so you better say it again.
Yes, the phone number again?
Yes, the phone
908-617-5492. You could just ask for Dawn.
Okay, Dawn, what can the public do to help Freedom House?
So in addition to the fundraisers that we do throughout the year, great things, join our Facebook page, Freedom House New Jersey, and you'll see all the upcoming events we have going on. We also have several event committees, and so we're always looking for some people to be on those committees for short term. Mm-hmm. It's not a long term commitment like, being on our marketing and development committee or our finance committee, but we are looking for people on those committees as well. And, if someone is interested in board service, we can always talk about that as well.
Oh, okay. Right. Okay. I have no question here. Okay. Go ahead, Larry.
If you get any testimonials from past clients or anything like that, because I know last time you had a couple.
Yep.
Okay.
Came with a couple in my pocket here, and I'll read one of them to you.
Go ahead.
So this is from one of our past clients named James. So 3 years ago, I woke up. I was given the courage to live and not simply exist. The 12 months that I spent at Freedom House changed my life, and I'm grateful for every last day. The program taught me life skills and tools to become an active member of society, how to live on a daily schedule, finding and keeping a job. Freedom House saved my life. This is typical of what we hear from many of our clients. They're down, they're feeling destitute and hopeless, and when they reflect back on their time with Freedom House, they realize that they were given a second chance to live. And many of them give back. They will come and speak at meetings, they'll volunteer at events, they'll sponsor other people in the program.
One thing I found interesting is you mentioned he had been there a year. Do you feel that they need, for success, something less than 6 months sometimes is just not enough?
Well, with this particular gentleman, I believe he's talking about from the time he started in the halfway house and then continued into transitional house and then, his outpatient services. Okay. So typically they could be with us for a year, just not in the same level of
got
care.
It. Okay.
Okay, I got a what would a typical quote-unquote day be like for a client?
Yeah, so they get up early. I think they're up and dressed and downstairs ready for breakfast like 6:30.
It is early.
You give them an afternoon nap?
Wow. No napping allowed.
But it depends on where they're at in the program, because when they're first getting there, they're on a blackout period or an orientation period. Mm-hmm. So they're not working. So during the day, they attend groups. They do, maybe some activities around the house.
or they go out to a meeting during lunchtime or something. But if they're working, obviously it depends on what time they need to be at work. Our first van leaves the house at 5:20 in the morning. Because we provide all the transportation,
Okay, yeah. Right, so you would have, you know, more than one person on the van, obviously, so you'd be going all over, okay.
Yeah, we ship out the troops early and then throughout the day as well, so it really depends on where they're at. So, you know, like, let's say if they're working, they get up, they go to work during the day, they come home, they shower, eat dinner, go to a meeting, or, you know, have a group at night. Weekends tend to be a little bit more low-key for the guys, just like, you know, the average person, but you know, it's pretty structured. Typically, there's a schedule that they need to adhere to. Even the guys who are on the orientation phase, I mean, we have groups throughout the day, you know. So it's pretty structured for sure.
If they are married, can their wives come and visit them, or can they bring the kids and see them?
So we have family sessions. So on Sundays, whoever, like I said, they consider to be family, does not necessarily have to be blood relative.
Right.
They can attend. They do have to attend educational family sessions. So from 10:30 to 12 o'clock on Sundays, we have a family education group, and a counselor will facilitate. It's just basic family education on substance use, support systems. And following those sessions, the clients can have visits with their quote-unquote family members.
Okay.
So, and it does kind of go in a progressive manner. So the first couple times that they have family attend those sessions, they can have an on-grounds pass or visit. And then the next two times, they can have, like, an off-grounds. They just have to be back by 3 o'clock. And then towards the end of the program, they can have an overnight. And towards the very end, they can even have a weekend pass, like a Friday night to a Sunday afternoon.
Right.
So it's progressive depending on if their family, quote-unquote, attended the sessions.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
I have a question about jobs. Now, do you help them find jobs? Are there certain jobs that are just readily available for them? Or are they usually coming in with their own jobs?
Well, typically clients are not coming in with their own jobs. A lot of times, being that it's 44 guys in the house and they all work, a lot of it's word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have a lot of places in the local communities that we do tend to use for employment for the guys. But, you know, that's not to say that they can't work at other places. So it really depends. A lot of it's word of mouth. A lot of it they might find online job search. But, you know, if they're having issues finding a job, of course we'll step in. But, you know, we really do encourage the guys to secure their employment on their own because they're capable.
Own.
I mean, they really are. A lot of times maybe the guys will need some help filling out, like, the online applications or something, or resume writing. Or a lot of times barriers to getting employment are verification of ID. A lot of guys don't have any source of ID when they come, so that's usually a barrier.
Right.
You know, birth certificates and social security cards. I mean, it can be a little bit of a logistical nightmare when they first get there.
Do you need more help from the community, the business community, in terms of offering jobs? Are there enough to go around?
Yeah, I don't think there's enough to go around, because many of the jobs that they will get will be, you know, minimum wage jobs, you know, in the service type industry, you know, landscaping, McDonald's, Dunkin' Donuts, things like that. We do have, you know, one or two large companies that will employ, you know, our residents and our graduates. And, you know, kudos to them for doing that and giving people a second chance. So if there is a local job, you know, corporation out there, please, you know, give me a call and I'd be happy to connect you with the executive director about that.
All right. You want to give the phone number on the Facebook thing again?
You got it. It's 908-617-5492. And the website's freedomhousenj.org. And Facebook, same thing. Just search Freedom House, New Jersey.
And when's your golf?
Golf outing, July 11th. We expect you to be there.
I don't know.
Oh, we can always put you on hold. Yeah.
Are you a golfer, Larry?
That'd be great.
A, I'm not a golfer. B, I think I'm going to be in Virginia, but I'm not sure. But I can't thank you ladies enough for coming, and I really would like to have you back again.
Oh, we'd love it. And you've been a wonderful host. Thank you.
Thank you.
Both of you.
Thank you for coming.
I just think that. And Jen, you did awesome.
Thank you.
Being dragged in at the last minute.
House and you guys, everybody's great. Everyone's doing great.
You know.
And we have the best clients. So
yeah,
that's right.
You know.
Yeah.
But just, you know, like I said, I'd really like to have you back again. Say hi to Glenn for me. And I hope he feels better. And you've been listening to Mental Health Matters. And remember, folks, mental health really does matter. See you again next week, same time, same station.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
For USA Radio News, I'm Wendy King. President Trump has called for immediate deportations for immigrants who cross into the U.S. illegally with no hearings. He tweeted the border wall would solve the issue once and for all. Administration officials are scrambling to comply with last week's order to reunite families. Attorney General Jeff Sessions says we must secure our borders.
We're going to continue to prosecute those adults who enter here illegally. We are going to do everything in our power, however, to avoid separating families.
Thousands of families are still waiting to be reunited. A lot of the parents are claiming ICE officials are not telling them where their children are. Communication with parents and other agencies have been a major issue in complying with the president's executive order to reunite the families. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Okay, so the big question for any decision you're going to make, is this actually going to work? Well, if you've heard about MediShare, which is a brilliant way of sharing healthcare costs, you may have wondered that. Does it work? Well, so did Dr. Stuart Hoover, who initially joined to save a lot of money. The typical family saves about $500 a month. Stuart saved even more.
When we first joined MediShare, we were immediately going from a little over $1,600 a month down to $460 basically a month.
So that's wonderful, but then his wife needed emergency surgery and the bills added up to $160,000.
So we were seeing the bills coming in, and then the bills were being paid. Portions were being shared, and the end result of this is this bill was taken care of.
Yes, MediShare works, and it's so easy to get your questions answered too, so why not? You can call right now, 833-39-BIBLE. That's 833-39-BIBLE, 833-39-BIBLE.
The entire police force in Ocampo, Mexico, was arrested by federal forces after the murder last week of a mayoral candidate. Fernando Angeles Juarez was killed outside his home by unknown gunmen on Thursday, one of over 100 politicians killed in Mexico prior to their general election on July 1st. The police officers were taken to the state capitol, where they were remanded to the custody of Internal Affairs. Prosecutors accused them of links to organized crime. A political battle over the decision of a Virginia restaurant to not serve Press Secretary Sarah Sanders. Representative Maxine Waters told a rally crowd and MSNBC that calling out Trump administration officials is a good idea.
They're not going to be able to go to a restaurant, stop at a gas station. They're not going to be able to shop at a department store. The people are going to turn on them. They're going to protest. They're going to absolutely harass them.
This is USA Radio News.
Everyone loves liberty, so why are you letting other people tell you what's best for your health care? Exercise your freedom with Liberty Health Share. Liberty Health Share is a community of people who voluntarily share one another's medical costs. Members are able to take back the freedom to make their own decisions about their health care. Stop letting others tell you what to do. Call us at 855-58-LIBERTY for more information or check us out online at libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
Secretary of Defense James Mattis is making another trip to the Indo-Pacific region, but this one includes a visit to China. John Clemens has more.
After visiting two different Air Force bases in Alaska, Mr. Mattis will be visiting China, where the Pentagon tells us he'll be meeting with several senior officials to exchange strategic perspectives while discussing areas of mutual concern. This is the first visit of a Secretary of Defense to China since 2014. He then travels to South Korea, then concludes his trip June 29th in Tokyo. For USA Radio News, I'm John Clemens.
A famous comedian has an emotional breakdown while issuing another apology for something that she tweeted. And USA's Chris Barnes has the story.
I horribly regret that. Are you kidding? I've lost everything.
That's Roseanne Barr expressing regret as she breaks down during a podcast interview over the weekend over the racist tweet she sent out last month, which led to the cancellation of her Roseanne reboot by ABC.
And I regretted it before I lost everything. And I said to God, I am willing to accept whatever consequences this brings.
Barr saying she's lost everything and now is nothing but a, quote, hate magnet. And for USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
For USA Radio News, I'm Wendy King.
That have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges.